Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices. All in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5. Then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, James, what's the strongest androgen milligram for milligram?
DHEA.
So would that make the strongest alcohol kombucha?
Yeah, DHEA is to androgens as kombucha is to alcohol. The strongest androgen milligram per milligram is probably, what, methyltrin oral?
Probably
so. Because that's a microgram measurement.
It's definitely not testosterone as far as its anabolic potential. What is the strongest GLP-1 milligram for milligram?
Well, I don't want to spoil it for the audience, but we'll get into that. We'll also talk about how to... or how pharmaceutical companies develop studies to create the outcomes they want. Or maybe it just was coincidental timing. But if you're the richest and most valuable pharmaceutical company, you might have incentives to not do a true apples-to-apples comparison. So we'll chat about that. At some point, we start chatting about ChatGPT as your doctor because of the takeover of algorithms and healthcare recommendations. So yeah, this will be a fun one to get into.
Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast, where we give you tools to develop a balanced approach for health. I'm Dr. Kyle Gillette.
And I'm James O'Hara, nurse practitioner. And today we have another GLP-1 update for everyone. So we're going to be chatting about semaglutide versus tirzepatide. And we'll probably title it, Semaglutide is Stronger Than Tirzepatide, which is shocking for a lot of people. But why might we suggest this?
Yeah, actually for the same reason that tren is a stronger anabolic agent than testosterone.
Or that vodka is a stronger alcohol than beer.
Correct. Yeah. Is beer stronger than vodka if you have 10 beers versus just one shot of vodka?
Yes.
Is testosterone stronger than tren
if you do 10 shots? Are we speaking in analogies of shots here?
Oh, shots. 10 shots of 200 mgs. Is it stronger if you do 1,000 milligrams a week versus 100 milligrams a week of tren?
Oh, for sure.
And is Mounjaro stronger if you do not 1,000, but 10 milligrams a week versus 1 milligram a week of semaglutide?
According to this chart, which we'll put up on the screen, you can look at the relative dose strength. Actually, this is a very nice diagram of all the different, most of the different GLP-1s that are out there, the ones that are more commonly used now. And you can, in fact, see that tirzepatide has the highest bars, but these are not like milligram equivalents by any means. These are just what the max sort of FDA-approved milligram doses are and their corresponding weight loss after 1 year. And more and faster isn't always better when it comes to weight loss.
Yeah, that's true. So people complain a lot about how, you know, semaglutide isn't powerful enough. You know, my metabolic damage is so severe that it requires tirzepatide. But at the same time, the slower the weight loss, the better. Of course, as always with lifestyle interventions, but we're going to focus in on GLP-1s. I did notice that this study was in a non-peer-reviewed journal. So, you know, things like studying 10 mgs of Mounjaro versus 1 mg semaglutide instead of 2.4 wouldn't slip by. But wait, that did slip by in the SURPASS-2 trial.
Yeah, I'm on the border here of whether this was clever timing on Lilly's part or whether it was something that was actually intentional. Because technically, like Wegovy had come out, of course, when this research was ongoing at 2.4 milligrams.
But 2 mgs of Ozempic hadn't come out yet.
It came out March of 2022. And if I'm looking at the publication data, it's citing GoodRx prices from October 2022. So maybe everyone at Lilly was just totally unaware that there was a 2.0 milligram Ozempic on the horizon that they could have done a more apples to apples comparison with.
Yeah, these are just dumb doctors like me. These aren't scientists and like the world's foremost peptide GLP-1 researchers.
The most valuable pharmaceutical company in the world.
Peptide experts. They only have good billions of dollars.
Simple oversight.
If you were studying semaglutide right now, would you just study the 2.4 mg max? If you're comparing it to your new peptide, you're comparing it to, what's the combination? Cagrilinotide, semaglutide. What would you study the semaglutide arm in? Or if you're comparing it to the new triple agonist, would you study it up to 2.4 or study it up to 7.2 that all of us know they're trying to get FDA approval for Wegovy?
Yeah, quick sidebar before I answer that. What do you think the titration schedule is for going up to 7.2 milligrams?
Of
semaglutide?
Yeah. 0.5, 1, 2.4, 4.8, 7.2.
There is no titration. Go straight from 2.4 to 7.2.
No, 4.8.
So it's a 20-week titration, but that goes from 0.25 to 0.5, but then 2.4 jumps right to 7.2. I thought that was interesting.
I bet they could titrate it faster if they went, they started with Mounjaro, 2.5, 5, 7.5 Mounjaro, and then switched to semaglutide, 2.4, and then 7.2.
Oh, I see.
Is that one month faster? I think it is.
Yeah, I just thought that was a shocking, they're just going straight to tripling the dose there, which perhaps the effects are not, you know, linear. We're going to figure out what the ceiling is, I'm sure, and if there are more, you know, health risks and side effects at a higher dose, I think the rate of the weight loss will dictate that. But to your point, if I'm looking at retatrutide and I am trying to study it versus a current GLP-1, I guess I would want to pick an equivalency, but if I'm a company that has shareholders to reward, then maybe I'm motivated to pick the dose that makes my results seem the best. So if I'm wanting to prove that the existing compound I have, let's say it's tirzepatide, is just as good or better, I'm going to use the, you know, mid-range dose of retatrutide. If I'm working for whatever company has scooped up retatrutide, then maybe I'm just going to use 5 mg tirzepatide and pit that against my max dose retatrutide and say, look how much better this is, to create some distortion.
Yeah. So basically what they did in the SURPASS 2 trial, if you look at that up on the screen, they studied 1 mg semaglutide versus not 1 mg tirzepatide, which, by the way, you can give to patients. How do you give a dose if you can't count clicks? Because with Ozempic, you can count clicks. With Wegovy and Mounjaro, you cannot count clicks. So there's a one secret biohack of how you can do that. and how they've likely done that, like very possibly done that in a lot of clinical trials as well, is use a dose that is not supposed to be used. But yeah, anyway, they used the 1 mg semaglutide and 5, 10, and 15 tirzepatide, which makes tirzepatide look pretty good there. So again, if you just change the units, multiply by 100, compare 100 mg of trenbolone to 500 mg, 1,000 mg, and 1,500 mg of testosterone. Maybe not the best example. Maybe you think about 10 mg trenbolone versus 50 mg test per week. 100 mg test per week, 150 mg test per week. Now I'm talking more clinical doses and not bodybuilder doses.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at milligrams, some people out there will look at a milligram dose on a drug and think, wow, that's a lot. It's like, oh, you've got 1,000 milligrams of Tylenol or 20 milligrams of oxycodone. Like, of course, the oxycodone is much more potent as a pain-relieving agent. Mm-hmm. Even though the milligram dose is substantially lower. And they're not in the same class by any means other than being analgesics. They have a very different mechanism. But, you know, the milligram that you're looking at doesn't always represent, just because something is a few milligrams doesn't mean that it is necessarily weak.
Yeah.
And this is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. So it's interesting that these triple agonists that people are calling synergistic or dual agonist, dual incretin, like tirzepatide. You know, you would think if it has two mechanisms of action, kind of attacking the insulin resistance from both fronts, if you will, that it will have better efficacy. But it's also very possible, as we've mentioned in the past, that it has more side effects. And I'm not trying to manifest this into existence, but the synergistic growth hormone secretion, especially from a triple agonist where you have high glucagon as well, high glucagon agonism, I am very concerned that high doses of that will lead to extremely fast tumor growth. Because I would love to see a growth hormone area under the curve compare a triple agonist versus doses of Omnitrope, which is recombinant human growth hormone. I bet that the high doses of triple agonists that are going to be approved at some point are equal to a pretty hefty dose of HGH, which we know leads to lots of tumor growth and cancer risk. And again, I'm just putting that out there so that clip is there for somebody to pull up in 5 or 10 years and we're like, oh, we found out that all these obesity medications also cause cancer, which other obesity medications and diabetes medications have in the past. So hopefully it doesn't manifest it into existence.
Yeah, but it is a real theoretical concern. I mean, we have seen patients who have very significantly increased IGF-1, people reporting like unintentional benefits, like, oh, like my skin or my hair, these things are getting better being on this medication. Very similar to the positive side effects of growth hormone therapy before it was sort of shut down, people overusing it for cosmetic purposes. So if you're taking something like 2.4 mg semaglutide and now you're giving people three times that amount.
People would never overuse this for cosmetic purposes.
Right. I think it is a significant concern. And to your point, you know, the glucagon, that's also going to be a growth hormone secretagogue. You have all these sort of GHRPs that aren't GHRPs. And the same people who are shouting, these medications have no signal towards any increased cancer risk. There is no way these can increase cancer risk. There's people saying that. They probably hold the same viewpoint that people should not take growth hormone because of the cancer risk. I just think they're unaware or they're ignoring the data and the mechanisms we know are there.
Robot algorithm.
Two words.
Yes. Yep. Two more words. Artificial intelligence will be your PCP. It's more than two words.
We should make that one a real.
Imagine your AI PCP arguing with your AI. By the way, the old model of the AI, let's make that clear. The old model of the AI is no longer a PCP and is now working for the insurance company, which is denying the prior authorization attempt of your AI PCP.
Oh, so it's like it's BattleBots, but with ChatGPTs.
Yes. Elon Musk's artificial intelligence is your primary care provider. But the insurance company have bought the old model of Jeff Bezos that learned from the Amazon primary care thing. And they have now retired and are working for the insurance companies.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting future. I think one component that could be interesting is the AI as your primary care or even as a health optimization specialist for the basics, right? So you put on your Google Glasses or whatever, you know, some sort of AI. It's like, oh, you're having these symptoms. Like, let's see what a couple days in your life looks like. And then it sees that you are just downing processed food, spending 6-8 hours a day on your phone. You're sleeping 4 hours a night. And then, you know, you go back to your AI GP and it's like, oh, yeah, I wore the Google Glasses. What did my test results say? Of course, it'll have the blood work and all the medical knowledge in the world there. And it'll say, well, you need to eat less and move more. And people
sit
like,
less.
The AI is broken. It's not working. That would be some people's literal response. But
AI does not know about metabolic damage and adrenal fatigue.
It would, though.
It would. I guess we could ask ChatGPT. I did ask ChatGPT about compounded GLP-1 as well.
Ooh. What did it have to say? I'm curious to know the answer there.
Yeah. It said, whether compounded GLP-1 is bad or good depends. Usually when an expert answers, the expert does start with, it depends. I know we've both been told to say, just tell us the nuance. Don't say it depends, because then it gets confusing for people. But it does often depend. But it varies regarding the quality of the compounding process, the source of the ingredients, and the specific needs and health conditions of the individual patient. And honestly, I think those three things are perfect. Those are the three things that we typed up in our answer when we're asked about compounded GLP-1s. The source of the raw ingredient, for example, the biopeptic FDA-inspected facilities. That's a great start. That's kind of the gold standard for raw ingredients. Maintain strict third-party testing protocols for both sterility and content. And then this is a sterile compounded medication. You should have a sterile compounding pharmacy.
And I like the third part of that, where it says taking into account the needs of your individual patients. So if you have someone who has a need, let's say someone who has a specific plan exclusion for weight loss coverage, this is more and more common.
Yes.
I see it a lot with Blue Cross Blue Shield. I don't know if that's
reflective, not to call out any names,
across like the nationwide trends, but anecdotally, that's what I've seen. So let's say someone has that and they have a need clinically to improve their health for one of these medications that does not cost $1,000 a month, then spending $150 a month on a safe, sterile, tested, accessible medication makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So if you're one of the 95% of diabetics that's not on a GLP-1 that could benefit from one, all of those 95% of diabetics should consider one, even if it's compounded, as long as it kind of meets the first two criteria of quality compounding procedures and quality ingredients.
Yeah, because the sicker you are, the more the risk-benefit skews towards benefit. So a diabetic with an A1C of 15, that's off the charts. Like that has to get under control, the sooner the better. Whereas if you have someone using this for, what they call the vanity weight loss, it's like, oh, I want the scale to be 5 pounds lower and I don't want to do, anything else except take something that makes me not eat. I have a hard time seeing how that's justified. There's people out there prescribing in that manner, but it just doesn't add up to me.
Yeah. GLP-1s, I would consider efficacious appetite suppressants, but not a good choice for an appetite suppressant. In regards to cost, we also found an interesting study that studied the cost, which was supposed to be a real-world study, but it ended up being a very not real-world study because they used GoodRx prices. So GoodRx prices for Mounjaro and Ozempic and Wegovy and Zepbound, they're going to be the exact same price per month, regardless of what dose you do. And basically, it's not sustainable for anyone. And it only gives you, it'll give you like a 5% discount. So
yeah, it's not
if
a
you
huge
can afford the GoodRx
savings.
Coupon, like to stay on that for a year, what is that? $16,000, $17,000,
$18,000? Yeah, it's like the analogy of like, oh, I could just, go to Europe and get these medications. In Germany, it's like less than $100 a month or something like that. It's like, yeah, you go to Germany or Italy or one of these countries and you're also walking everywhere.
Yep.
You're eating healthier foods. You're living a very un-American lifestyle. And then you find out, oh, I'm dropping weight. I don't even need the medication after all.
Yeah.
So take that $20,000 and go on a summer vacation instead.
Yeah. And then rebound when you get back if you haven't had new habits.
Yeah.
Even without GLP-1, 98% of people who lose weight tend to rebound if they don't change their lifestyle.
Yeah. And it seems like, I think we did a whole podcast, or at least a segment of one, on the idea that people are not always rebounding when they go off of GLP-1. More than half of the cases, people are not. Now, they may be using other medications. They may be getting compounded versions that are not picked up in the, sort of EHR databases. There's probably a lot of things going on there.
Because the insurance company does not want to pay for any maintenance dose of Wegovy under 1.7. They'll cover 1.7 and 2.4. So I always say 100% of the time, if you're coming off a GLP-1, you want to wean off slowly. And if your insurance company is not going to cover all of the low doses, then you're basically stuck with either samples, of which they're extremely hard to come by, or high quality compounded GLP-1. So we kind of recreated this trial, and we'll post their results up on the screen. That basically a little over a year costs $20,000, $17,000 for tirzepatide, $20,000 for semaglutide. Again, that's not a real world study. And they had 1% of body weight reduction at around $1,000 to $2,000. Our examples that we'll also post up here, 1 milligram, about $12 a week of semaglutide, 2.5 milligrams of semaglutide is about $30 a week, but 2.5 milligrams of tirzepatide is about 11, maybe a bit more. The costs do fluctuate a bit. And 5 mgs of tirzepatide, which I would say of our patients, I don't know. I don't think I have a patient that's not a diabetic on 15 mgs Mounjaro or Zepbound or tirzepatide. Almost like the usual dose for tirzepatide is 5 mgs.
Yeah, and I think that's because our practice is also not just automatically setting people up on titration protocols. It's not like no matter what you do, every 4 weeks you go up on the dose, because we're not trying to spin out publications showing that, hey, we had people lose 20% of their body weight in 6 months or in 12 months.
Yeah.
Basically, it's slow and steady, tracking DEXA, lean body mass changes, making sure people are focusing on other pillars of health, not just looking at, you know, the number on the scale. But low doses do seem to be quite well tolerated and still effective enough. We do have the, I guess, sort of benefit of having a very motivated population.
Yes.
So I'm sure that can't be completely disregarded. But, you know, to your point, yeah, I don't think that there's any patients that are maxing out tirzepatide unless they are type 2 diabetic.
Yeah, we have patients gaining lean body mass on low doses of GLP-1s. And a lot of people have great luck on 0.5 of semaglutide and sometimes even 0.25. 0.5 is about $5 or $6 per week. That is a pretty cheap cost per pound of body weight reduction. So I guess if you compare it to spending that money on a like slightly more expensive gym membership, it starts to be a better investment in your health. If you're thinking about the beta cell production of your pancreas over a like area of time, even if you're just insulin resistant, not pre-diabetic, if from age 20 to 30, you were 100 pounds of body fat too heavy, then that is a lot of potential damage.
A lot of metabolic damage, yeah. Loss of beta cells. You think about preserving those beta cells. You know, you want more of those, not less of those, as you advance in age, because the pancreas generally is not going to improve in function, just like most tissues are not going to improve in function with age. Mm-hmm. So keeping, just like muscle mass, keeping as many beta cells around as you can seems like a pretty good idea.
Yeah. So I guess end-stage metabolic damage is actually diabetes, isn't it? Or end-stage is actually dementia.
The type 3 diabetes, as they call it.
Type 3 diabetes. That's an interesting thought. I think that about sums up our thoughts from these studies, but I'm glad that there's non-peer-reviewed articles that are published that look at, you know, very small groups of people, only 400,000 patients in this analysis. So I'm sure it has no validity whatsoever since it wasn't funded by Eli Lilly or Novo Nordisk like the others, but hopefully this gave you good tools either for your balanced approach for health or a loved one, family, or friend.
Yeah, I think a couple of closing points would just be the 7.2 mg semaglutide trial should be results should be coming out December unless they release something early. So we've still got 6 or 7 months to go there. And we did both critique and praise the GLP-1 medications. They are some of our favorites, but they do come with risks. And I think it's important to note they don't work for everyone. About 15% of people don't get any clinically significant weight loss from these. So some people may only lose, you know, less than 5% of their body weight, and that's within the realm of normal. It's not going to be a fix-all for everyone. So I think those are just a couple of add-on points. But yeah, overall, I hope you enjoyed our update, enjoyed the graphs here. Thank you for the people who have published this, and thank you for watching. May God bless you with health and happiness.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.